Talk About on Radio Kerry with Deirdre Walsh.
Good afternoon and you're very welcome to Tuesday on the Talk About programme. I'm Deirdre Walsh with you here on Radio Kerry over the next hour and a half and hoping to have the pleasure of your company for the whole show. Lots to discuss, lots of interesting guests to meet as always. A little later on we'll be joined by careers expert Mary Lucy and today Mary is going to talk specifically about changing your career. Now she tells me that there's lots of people out there in Kerry at the moment who are not happy in their jobs and are looking to move on to a completely different career. So how do you do that? What are the first steps you need to take? Well, Mary will be chatting about that later on. She's got loads of great advice and tips. And of course, she's available to answer any career questions you have. That also applies, by the way, to anybody who has college plans or maybe a son or daughter going to college or a son and daughter awaiting exam results, all of that area she will be able to answer your questions on. So that's coming up later on. We've also got another opportunity for you to win in our fabulous Mother's Day competition. I'll tell you all about the prizes and how to enter in a few minutes time. And we'll be joined by well-known broadcaster Dermot Whelan of Dermot and Dave fame. When he's not on the airwaves, of course, Dermot is a stand-up comedian and he's also a great advocate for mindfulness and meditation. And he'll be telling us about his most unusual show that is coming to the INEC in Killarney this Thursday night. So chatting to him too. So all of that to come. But remember, we would love to hear from you if there's anything you would like to throw into the mix this Tuesday. You'll find us on the phones on 066 712 3666. The email is talkabout@radiokerry.ie. And if you prefer to text or WhatsApp, it's the same number for both. And it's 083 300 3300. Now, my first guest on the show this afternoon is Neil Fox. And Neil joined us on the show a few years ago, telling us about his late sister, Donna, who was killed tragically in a cycling accident in Dublin back in 2016. And since then, Neil has been working tirelessly as a road safety advocate. And the last time he was talking to us, it was about the Give Time, Give Space campaign that he set up in memory of Donna. But now he has something else that he wants to share with us, and it's still in the realm of road safety. Neil, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Deirdre. Hi, and hello to everyone in Kerry.
It's lovely to have you on the show again.
Not at all. Thank you.
You're a good few years down the line now since tragically you lost Donna. You're still so determined to be an advocate for road safety. What keeps you going, Neil?
I think you feel compelled. Some people feel compelled to do something when something like that happens, and I guess I'm in that number. To be honest with you, I hadn't expected to stay doing this for so long. The original plan was for 1 or 2 years, but unfortunately, the work still needs to be done. We've had a lot of improvements on cycling. Which is good, but there still needs to be lots done. And I suppose on a good note, this morning, we've had no cycling fatalities in 2023, and I hope that continues. You know, and we've also seen a major reduction compared to last year in motorcycle collisions and fatalities, because last year was pretty bad for that. So there are two positives, but the numbers are up overall, but just in those categories. So I suppose what I'm on this afternoon about is a cycling engagement group that I'm trying to just get a few more people involved in by the end of this month, if they can contact me, and I'll give those details at the end. But basically it's to the portal for cycling and things like that. And it's to do with policing, the Garda Síochána and cyclists in general. And I recently met with the Assistant Commissioner, Paula Hillman, and some of the superintendents in the National Roads Policing. And they've been quite supportive of the idea. I've requested that a body be set up within An Garda Síochána. Like, what I'm calling it is like a cycling liaison office or officers. That's just like it's hard to put a proper name on it, but that's just sort of a working title. The idea is to build better relationships with the cycling community, especially regards the dangers overtaken of a cyclist legislation, which many people feel is not being enforced. And it's been a bit fobbed off by guards around the country. Different response to us. Some are excellent on it.
That's one area where we could improve in. What is the biggest problem for cyclists on the road? I mean, you mentioned dangerous overtaking of cyclists there, but I'm sure there are other issues.
I think that is the biggest issue, to be honest. And I suppose the other is, on things like parking and cycle lanes, especially in towns and cities, it can seem like a very... you're just running in maybe to the shop or you're doing a delivery or something and you think you're only going to be a couple of seconds or a few minutes. As we all know, it always runs a little bit longer than that. But the thing is that it does put road users at risk, cyclists, because you have to go out into the road, and sometimes it's quite dangerous to do that, or alternatively to go on to the pedestrians' path as well. So it's a small differences like that, and the give time, give space thing was even about people opening the car door without looking, things like that, because it really is to slow down, I suppose, is the main message as well. That's across the board for all types of be you driving, cycling, or whatever. When you're at crossroads, so that's a really at junctions to really check, and not to. I think for a cyclist as well, it's not to assume that the driver is going to do what they're supposed to do, and vice versa, for a driver not to assume that the cyclist is going to do what they think they're going to do.
Exactly.
To be that bit more cautious.
And I know, just to come to Donna for a moment, and her passing, her unnecessary death was just such an appalling tragedy. Did she cycle a lot?
Yeah, Donna cycled. She had. I'm forgetful now of exactly how long she was cycling into work. I'd say it was a year, maybe a little less or a little more than that. She used to drive, we're from a place called Nall, which is a rural part of Dublin, it's North County Dublin. So she used to drive from her home to the city, near the city centre, I suppose Santry direction, if people know where that is, or Glasnevin. And then she'd cycle the rest of the way. She worked in a place called Barrow Street, so just across the river from the customs house, more or less, and a little bit further than that, beside Google, actually, where Google is based. She was working in a pharmacy there. But it was actually all cycle lanes from where she would have parked to her workplace. So it's kind of, then when I say cycle lanes, actually I was with the AGSI a few months ago as well, and it was actually one of those guards just pointed out in conversation, that it was an unprotected cycle lane. And I suppose we hear of cycle lanes, but they were right, it was an unprotected cycle lane, as in it was just a painted line. Which is better than nothing. Now it has been altered since, it's improved since then, but in general, in most places, it is still just painted lines, and we're relying on the goodwill of a motorist not to go over that, it was unlucky, I think it's always important to say that a crash or a collision happens sometimes in less than a second is the, it's a very minute amount of time that somebody makes a mistake or doesn't see something. And, unfortunately, it's a difference in life and death sometimes. So there always is that aspect. But I suppose what we all fight in road safety is to make it as preventable as possible. I think as well, one thing that's important always to say is that laws and regulations, they're not there to punish drivers. They're actually there to save lives and to protect people. And there's so many injuries. As I said earlier, thankfully we've not had a number of deaths this year in cyclists. But at the same time, the people get very badly injured on the roads almost daily.
Yeah. And Neil,
that's the thing as well.
It strikes me that there's way more bikes on the road than there used to be. Now, here in Kerry, we have the huge charity cycle, the Ring of Kerry cycle, that happens every July, and you see people out training for it. But I think as well, there's a lot of people now that are trying to do their bit for the environment, trying to use their car a bit less, and even maybe trying to track down, or trying to cut down rather, on parking charges, so they might be tempted to cycle to work rather than drive to work. So I think, you know, your campaign is timely, really, because I feel we're going to be seeing a lot more people cycling in the months and years ahead. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And the good thing about that is that the more people who do use their bikes, who do cycle, the safer it will become, because other road users will be more used to seeing cyclists on roads that perhaps they're not. You know, but I think that's really good. And you're right, the environmental end and even the health end, and you know, the way, like, it's active transport is a major thing in recent years being promoted. And, you know, you've got things like bike to work schemes and things like that, which are great. And you're right about parking and that. And I think we're going to, especially in bigger towns and cities, we're going to see even less, they are less available space for private owner of private cars, we'll say. I think that will come in maybe gradually, but it is already, you know, that there is more pedestrianised and areas as well.
I know you're not pointing the finger at anybody in particular, mm-hmm. but I suppose every time we talk about anything to do with cyclists on the programme, Neil, drivers
do... reaction.
Yeah, well, we get a mixed reaction, because drivers always get in touch complaining and saying cyclists need to be more visible. Why don't they wear their helmets? Why don't they wear brighter clothing? So I suppose there's a bit of education on both sides really needed.
Yeah, and just an answer to that one, you know, there is no actual legal obligation on a cyclist to wear a helmet in Ireland, and there's no legal obligation for them to wear bright clothes. There are certain things, you know, that you're meant to have some sort of reflector on the back of your bike that's very visible, all right. But I think that it's important, you know that like a person on a bike is not as dangerous, we'll say, as a car, obviously in terms of injuries. But on the same side of that, I always go down on kind of a self-care thing, you know, that for a cyclist you need to protect yourself first. But the helmet thing, which is I remember when my sister was killed, I sort of was quite naive. I didn't realise it was such a contentious issue, you know, but it is. And I think partly the reason for that in the past was that was the only narrative that was out there. Now that has changed. You've got the RSA and other people, and everyone is saying the same thing. We need better infrastructure and that, you know, rather than just sort of blame the cyclist sort of idea. But on the helmet thing, like, my sister was wearing her helmet, and you know, the helmet, you know, I remember one of the shocking things from the, I'm not sure, was it the inquest or the statements afterwards, was that the helmet was smashed all across the road. So, you know, people, like, when it's with a motor vehicle on impact, normally a helmet, unfortunately, doesn't protect the person. But having said that, there are some cases where it can. And the other part is that if you fall off your bike, you know, if you're wearing a helmet, you're much more likely not to be as badly injured, or not obviously to have head injuries earlier.
Of course.
So I would always say wear your helmet, you know, but that's just a personal thing with me. But I do think it's important, just because I remember when Donna died, people would, like, even like people related to me and you know, friends and that, they all just assumed that she wasn't wearing a helmet where she was, you know, at that time. So
it's not as safe.
And it's sad, because a lot of time people are doing their best. They're doing what they're meant to do, and unfortunately, they're often the ones that are, you know, badly injured or unfortunately, fortunately killed. But you're right. I think it's important, and I think that's the thing that I feel it's important for to have better involvement with the Gardaí, because it works both ways. You know, I'm certainly not somebody who's militant, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm not somebody who comes on and says that, oh, you know, all cyclists behave impeccably on the roads. Like, that's not true. It's like any road users, pedestrians included. You know, we don't always do what we're meant to do, but I suppose my plea to people is to kind of just be conscious. Like, I know it's easy for me to come on and say that, because obviously I've gone through something, and I know a lot of people who've lost people through that, so I'm obviously a bit more conscious of road safety than the average person. But I think the message is that it could be you, or it could be your brother, your sister, your mother, or, you know, it could be a friend or a colleague.
Your child even. Yeah, exactly.
That's so true.
So we can hope perhaps to see these new sort of cycling liaison officers coming on stream. How soon, do you think?
Well, I suppose the initial period is that well, I would like it immediately, obviously. But I suppose part of the reason that I think it's very important is not just to build better relations, but it's the introduction, because they're going to be bringing in what's called a portal for cycling. Thankfully, it is now in the pipeline, and hopefully they're saying 2024. So unfortunately, I'd say it will be that, or maybe even later, but who knows? It should be fast track, but you know yourselves, it takes time. But that's basically, just to be quick on it, it's basically a submission. It just eases the ability of cyclists or motorists to upload dash cam material or video evidence from cycling helmets, I should say, and it just of the dangerous overtaking and that. And that just, that brings about better prevention, because the more people that report them, the more it's not just enforced, but the more public it becomes that, oh gosh, the Gardaí are really going to follow up on this, so we just better, you know, give that bit of space. You know, 1.5 metres is recommended space, but I always say you can go a little bit more than that. That's for over 50 kilometres
yeah.
per hour parts of the road, and we'll say a metre for less than that. That little phrase, give time, give space, it's so important because we can all do that. So I suppose I suppose the reason I asked to come on today was really to ask maybe the average cyclist or commuter, especially in Kerry, and if there's cycling organisations or lobby groups as well, just to get in touch if they feel like getting involved. It will only be a matter of two maximum meetings, which will be hybrid, so some will be online, some will be in person, just to discuss, like, it's an opportunity for cyclists to say to the guards what they think needs improving.
Exactly,
and for the guards then to explain maybe certain things that, you know, there's confusion about. Like, I think I do worry about the publication on Twitter and on Facebook of videos of dangerous behaviours on the roads, because I worry that maybe won't be admissible in court if people are doing that. So we need to find out the legalities of that, because I think I understand why people do it, but at the same time, I just worry that it could actually go against a prosecution.
Against the prosecution, this is yeah. it. Neil, we've got to leave it there, unfortunately. But
yeah,
look,
no
it was great to talk to you.
My contact details, I should just say really quick, neilfoxcork@gmail.com. So it's easy enough to remember, neilfoxcork@gmail.com.
Cork as in the county Cork.
To get in touch. Yeah, I used to live there for a while. That's
okay. Well, look, I think what you're doing is great, and I also think it's very timely, because, as I said, we're going to see an explosion of people on the road and bicycles in the years ahead. Neil, keep up the good work. I'm sure Donna would be really proud of you, and it was great to talk to you this afternoon.
Thanks, Deirdre. Thank you so much.
All the best. That is Neil Fox there, talking about a new cycling engagement group, which he is working on behind the scenes with the Garda Assistant Commissioner, Paula Hillman. And it's all about making the roads safer for cyclists. And as you heard me say at the outset, Neil knows all about the tragedy that can be visited on families when there are road collisions that result in the death of cyclists, such as his sister Donna, who died a number of years ago. If you've any thoughts on that, or maybe you have some observations about cycling behaviour around here in Kerry, maybe you're a cyclist who has observations about driver behaviour, we would love to hear from you. What can we all do better? There's a question for you. Is it slowing down? Is it being more visible? Is it just being conscious of the fact that there are more cyclists on the road and giving them a little bit of extra space? What is it that could make the road safer for cyclists as well as motorists? Let us know your thoughts on that one. 083 300 3300. 9 minutes to two. We're back after this break.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. Celebrate your special family moments in their warm and friendly surroundings. Make the moment memorable with fresh, tasty food and exceptional service at Kitty O'Shea's, Killarney.
We're going to talk careers, not movies, and it's great to have you back. Thank you
very
for
much.
Coming in.
Thank you.
And I'm really interested in this particular slot, because I've spoken to so many people who say, God, you know what, I'd love to take my career in a whole new direction. But it's not something you can do overnight or on a whim. And that's what you're here to talk about.
Yeah. It's surprising the amount of people that are changing careers. I would meet probably at least 10 people a week and work with them that are deciding, especially since COVID, actually. I think people just reevaluated their life and the work they were doing, etc., and thought, okay, this is the time to make a change. So I do meet an awful lot of people, lots of different reasons why they're deciding to make a change and to, you know, to go in a different direction. Some of them you'd be surprised probably to hear that I get quite a few references from counsellors and psychologists and doctors because of the impact that a particular work, a role is having on somebody, and they need change. And they will say the root of their anxiety or maybe depression or stress is from their work. So sometimes people need to make change because of mental health and their own particular work situation, that it's impacting so badly on their own mental health. So that's one of the reasons why people would change. Also, sometimes you have people who fell into particular roles. They had a plan and it didn't happen. They might have started a job and stayed there and maybe got married and had children, and suddenly they're kind of tied to a situation and they have decided, why am I staying here? It's, you know, it's not what I wanted to do. And if I don't fulfill my dream now, I never will. So that's another reason why people change. Financially, people decide that, you know, this job, it's not making enough for me. Sometimes people are in a role that they're making an awful lot of money, but they're getting no satisfaction and they just do not like the job at all. So there is a myriad of reasons why people are changing, but they are changing.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned COVID there, and it impacted on so many different areas of careers. I mean, we're seeing the upshot of it now, because if you look at the hospitality industry and the shortages of jobs there, because so many people who were in hospitality are now gone into something else.
That's right.
The shortage of taxi drivers.
Absolutely.
So many taxi drivers during COVID found themselves no longer out late at night and getting probably abuse left, right and centre and decided, this isn't for me. And
they
now we have a shortage.
They saw better, they look at better options.
This is it. Yeah. So I suppose sometimes with some people, when redundancy or a situation, a one-off situation like a pandemic, when that forces change upon you, you have to change career, and it turns out to be for the better.
It is normally, it is for the better. And I think also with COVID, an awful lot of potential to upskill, retrain, you know, get a particular qualification went online. So it meant that rather than having to travel to Cork or to Dublin or whatever, people could stay at home, and in the evenings they could, you know, get a degree in something or do a course. So it meant that it opened up different opportunities for them as well. So lots of different things changed since COVID, and I think it has impacted then this move around in careers.
So what are the first steps you should take, or the first steps that you take, we'll say, when someone contacts you and they're considering a career change? Yeah.
So normally when I meet somebody and they want to talk about a career change, I look at, first of all, where they have been. And that means what they have done in the past, any education they have, courses they've done, training they have, where they are currently, so what are they doing now, and where do they want to go. And it's important to look and see the reason why they want to move, or what's impacting or triggering this potential change. Because sometimes, even last night, I was working with somebody and she absolutely loves her role, absolutely adores it, but she's not been paid enough. So my advice initially to that person was to speak to the manager and try to negotiate additional, you know, a pay rise or additional, because that was the only item that was affecting her negatively in the position. Whereas another person might say that, you know, I always wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to go down this route. And therefore, so that's why it's important to see what they have done in the past, how they feel about what they've done in the past, and what did they enjoy in the past and what roles they enjoyed. And the same with currently, because there's always something somebody's good at. I've said to you before, lots of times, somebody's always really good at something, and if they can focus on what they're really good at and look at a role then that's associated with that particular quality that they're good at, or, you know. Also then what you have to look at is the person's personal circumstances. So are they in a position that they're financially tied to the job they're in at the moment? Are they in a position that they can get support? Can they go back to college? Are they, for example, a single parent, so that they have to, you know, cover collecting children, dropping children to school, making sure that they're there in the evening? So there's lots of different particular elements, then you have to look to see what they even like when they were in school. Are there subject areas that they loved? And is that something that could be linked in? So you have to look at each individual case, look and see, you know, what they can bring to the table to date, and look and see where they would like to go. And most people have an idea, and it's really a lack of confidence, and they're scared to try something new in a lot, you know, a lot of cases. So, for example, if I suggest that they do a course or they make contact with somebody, they're afraid in case that they can't do it or they won't like it. And I mean, the worst possible outcome is that if they don't like it, they can go back to doing what they were doing previously and they were surviving. So, you know, never let fear or lack of confidence stop you from moving in a particular direction.
That's a great piece of advice. Can I give you a question that came in the last few minutes? And it's right on the money in terms of what you're discussing today. We've heard from a 36-year-old mom of three smallies. She says, I'm a hairdresser by trade, but due to back problems, I can no longer do hairdressing. I'm now in a position to go and do a course to get back working, but I've no idea what I want to do. Can Mary help or guide me in the direction of courses? And also, is there funding available to me? I'm currently on job seekers payment and want to come off that when I can.
Yeah, well, obviously she needs to see if she's interested in it. She started off hairdressing, so I would look to see why did she start hairdressing in the first place. Did she think perhaps maybe it was something she always wanted to do all her life? Is it something that she fell into? So you need to see what were her interests even when she started the hairdressing. And then when you consider a hairdresser, they're normally like very creative. They're normally great people skills because they're dealing with, they're nearly counsellors in actual fact. They hear all the problems people have. And they're also great at, we'll say, making people feel really good, because you know yourself when you go in and your hair is a mess and you suddenly come out and you have a great hairdo, you know. So she will have amazing skills that can be transferred to another role. So she needs to see, is there an area she would like to work in? And then look to see what training and upskilling is available locally, and something that is suitable. If she's three small children, she's going to have personal ties there because of that. So that's what she needs to do. Regarding the finance, there will be back to education allowances. There's some scholarships, etc. she could apply for if she hasn't a degree before. So, I mean, there's loads of options for that particular person there.
Mm. And even in terms of, she says she doesn't know what she wants to do, but I suppose it comes down to what you like and what you're interested in,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and if she teases that without, say for example, if I met her, I would be going through what she's interested in. And most people have something in the back of their mind that is just niggling at them that they probably wanted to do or they're thinking about doing, but they're even afraid to chance it. So when you tease out those items with them, and when you show them a path, and when we work out a career path and a route to get to where they want to, and they can see it's doable and they can take it in stages, it normally works out very well. And then they realise they have support to do that.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. We've someone who says they qualified as a secondary school teacher but can't settle into it. They dread going into the classroom every day and don't know what to do. Yeah, you get it. I'd say you probably get a lot of teachers with a burnout, don't you? Or they, again, like you said, they fall into teaching and then
they
discover
do.
It's not for them.
Yeah, and this really does happen an awful lot. And I suppose if we look at primary teachers and secondary school teachers, primary teachers, I get a lot of primary teachers coming to me because they feel they actually love the job they're in, but they can't see themselves there in 10, 20 years' time. And unless they opt to go for principal, there isn't really, you know, other routes in primary school teaching. Similar with secondary school teaching, my advice to somebody who is dreading going to class every day is get out of there, because that is not good for them. And certainly all of us probably had a teacher where we dreaded her coming in the door, or him coming in the door as well. and there's particular skills with teaching. I mean, you can be an expert in your subject area and absolutely amazingly good at and knowledgeable, but you just may not have the ability to get that message across, and it's a performance and you're entertaining in class and to get across, you know, and to engage with students. So if you don't have those kind of skills, you might be a qualified teacher, but you need to have additional skills as well as the knowledge about the subject matter. So I would suggest that person, if, for example, if it's an English teacher, take a look at other careers that might be linked to the English that she or he could look, for example, journalism, marketing, advertising, copywriting, anything like that. And it might suit them a lot better. So that's what I would do. But I would not stay in a career that she's dreading going in, because,
no.
I mean, that's just going to fester. And
life is too short.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Mary, we've got to take a break at this stage, but we'll be back with you. We've more questions for you. And again, if anybody wants to call us with a question for Mary, the phone number you need is 066-712-3666. And another Mary will take her call and pass the questions on to us. 19 minutes past two, you're listening to Talk About. Back in a moment.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. Celebrate your special family moments in their warm and friendly surroundings. Make the moment memorable with fresh, tasty food and exceptional service at Kitty O'Shea's, Killarney.
One Credit Union.
Now, if you just tuned in, we're chatting to careers expert Mary Lucy, and she's talking specifically this month about changing career and what to do if you don't like your job, you want to do something else, you want to move on. A listener gets in touch, Mary, and says all her life she wanted to be a counsellor, but between one thing and another, she fell into various other jobs, now has a family, runs her own business, but still regrets that she didn't follow that career to be a counsellor. She's wondering, is it too late for me to do anything about it now? That's a classic example of the little itch at the back of your head, as you said
earlier. As I said, No, not at all. What somebody like that could do is they could dip their toe, first of all, and do even an online module on counselling somewhere. And they could also volunteer with the likes of the Samaritans or, you know, some of the charitable organisations, the voluntary organisations that support people like that. Because the likes of the Samaritans will give you a little bit of training, how to deal, you know, answer the calls, etc. So you're just dipping your toe, I suppose, a little bit into the whole area. They can then go on and do a degree in counselling. They can do it part-time. So they can still continue working, running their business, etc. and do it. Now, there will be demands and you can't juggle all the balls in the air as high if you're going back to study. So I do think people do have to realise that, especially women. Sometimes they say to me, how will I manage the family and how will I have all the dinners and how will I have the house? You know, they're concerned about things, but those things will just have to, they'll have to divvy out the work a little bit more, probably do less. The house may not be as clean, the meals may not be as fancy maybe, but that's fine too. So they just need to realise there will be a bit of juggling to do, but you can go back and you can do your degree and you can do it part-time at your own pace in reality. So therefore the person can go on, become a counsellor, but they will need the support of the family that they're seeing. It's important that the family are there behind them and will support them.
Yeah, so you will get there in the end.
Oh yes, of course.
But there's a bit of perseverance, because we're all terrible for kind of putting obstacles in our own way and saying, well, I couldn't do that now because I have to clean the house or because I have to do A, B or C.
But and I notice women that I work with that are suggesting going back to college, etc. And this isn't being sexist. This is based on fact for people that I've worked in with. They do say, like, who's going to do this? Who's going to do this? But, you know, you have to put different, plans in place and you'll find they all will work out. And it's important to go. If you have a goal like that, it's important to strive and get that goal. And as I said again, it's confidence thing. Sometimes put obstacles into place because then there's a reason why they don't go for it. Whereas remove the obstacles and just be positive about the fact that, you know, you will get there. If you do overcome reach an obstacle, you can overcome it. And most of the colleges, if it's a mature student going back and doing a part-time, they're very aware of the demands that is on a particular student. Especially a mature student, they are very demanding. There's lots of pulls on them in different areas. They might be having to return to college and been in education for a long time. So there is support systems there. And I mean, they have to realise they're not expected to be geniuses when they go back to do a course. That's what they're there for, to learn. So if they're very realistic and practical about it and realise that even though we all make out we're super women, we're not. So that, you know, help is there for them as well to realise that.
Now, here's a good one. And this is kind of almost like the opposite of the other problem. This listener says, I'm in a role that involves a lot of interaction with the public and listening to their problems all day long. I hate it. And I now realise that I qualified for a career I'm completely unsuited to. I'm a really shy person. It is a very well-paying role that I'm in, but I just don't know what to do. I could imagine that would be difficult, all right, if you're listening to people's problems all day long.
And I suppose a lot of the problems even that we're listening to now and that I'm dealing with are problems that if they could have been caught before they did courses in college, in reality, it would have, you know, solved a lot of people's problems, because obviously, if someone's, you know, they know if they're introverted, and they should, if they've researched the course, they will know what's involved in the course, if there's a lot of interaction with people and problem solving, etc. And I mean, that's very true. Some people just are really happy not being involved with public, whereas some people thrive being involved with public. So that person, again, I would suggest that they would look at role similar or linked in some way to their qualification, and see if they can go through another vein. We'll just say if it's counselling, and you realise you're qualified as a counsellor and you hate it dealing with people, take a look and see, is there another side to counselling that doesn't involve that? So there will be the whole area of compliance, of governance, of health and safety involved, and you wouldn't have the same interaction with people. So they could qualify or just get an add-on year or something, and take a look and see if they can use the qualification that they have as a base and just as a stepping stone to qualify in an area that they don't have to deal with as much of the public as they have to. And because it is pretty demanding. I mean, if you consider the lady who wrote in about the hairdresser, she would probably be wonderful in the role because she's well used to dealing with the public, and listening to their problems. So that's why I'm saying, you know, there's a course for everybody. Really.
It sounds like there's a lot of square pegs and round holes out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's to find the right peg for you.
This is an email, very interesting one. I think a lot of people will identify with this. Listener doesn't leave a name. Says, I'm working in a role for 20 years and it's so boring. I'm becoming brain dead from it. I feel I need something challenging and stimulating. Am I mad or should I just put up with it?
No. They're not at all mad, because, I mean, it is important. I think it is important for everybody, no matter what they're doing or their role is, that they look forward to going into work in the morning, that they enjoy what they're doing, they enjoy their interactions, they are respected at work, and they respect people at work as well. And that it is exciting and challenging and, you know, kind of stimulating for them. Now, if people find that they are just, as this person said, completely bored and fed up, etc., they need to do something about it. Because sometimes you might be working in an organisation and whoever's in charge, or the manager or supervisor, if that's you, or whoever you're reporting to, may have no idea how you're feeling. They may think, God, Deirdre Walsh is getting on great there. There isn't a sound out of her. You know, she's working away and there's no problem. But they may have no idea sometimes unless you communicate with them. So ideally in a work environment, there should be regular meetings that you can feel free to air your opinions and air how you're feeling. Likewise with whoever you're reporting to, etc. But sometimes that doesn't happen. So they should, you know, arrange a meeting with the person that they're working with or their manager and explain how they feel. And it is difficult to get people to fit with your culture and organisation's culture. So if they've got somebody who's working well, who, you know, fits well with culture, is a good team member, etc., managers and organisations want to hold on to them, if they've any sense, all right? So if someone comes to you and say, look, I really want to try and, you know, increase my responsibility, do a course, I want to try and, you know, work in another area, I would be very surprised if someone shoots them down and says, you know, this isn't going to happen. So my advice to someone like that when they come to me is to say, go and speak to somebody at work and see first if they can open up a new avenue for you to go and work, or, you know, upskill you in some area. Or if there's a particular area that you're interested in, ask, can you go 2 days to work that area, 3 days on your own, and gradually see if you can move across.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't just accept, like, everything, really.
Yeah, because you'll regret it, because another 20 years will be gone by
absolutely does fly.
It does.
And you shouldn't regret, yeah.
When you think of the amount of time in our lives that our working day takes up, yeah, it's a huge chunk.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important. Like, I think it's really sad when I work with people and they say, you know, I hate my work. I hate going in there. I'm intimidated by, you know, a manager. I'm intimidated by my work colleagues or whatever. I think it's so sad, like, I really do, if they're not happy there, because, you know, as you said, you spend such a long time, and then if you're unhappy at work, when you go home you're unhappy and you're stressing and you're dreading the next day going to work. Whereas, I mean, there's always going to be little problems at work, it's inevitable, but, like, they should be easily resolved, and it should be an environment that's supportive, and that, you know, it's a can-do attitude and positive, and that they want to empower all the members of the organisation, and they want them to feel good about what they're doing in their job. I mean, that's ultimately what people should be doing.
Absolutely. Mary, unfortunately we're out of time. Time flies when you're chatting and having fun. as always, if you know, just to remind people, this is what you do. I mean, we've probably put a lot of emphasis on the educational side of what you do so far on this slot. Yeah, but yeah. I was delighted you spoke about this because this is your bread and butter as well.
Yeah.
People who come in the door and say, I hate my job. What can you do for me? What can you advise me? That's the type of thing you do. Remind people how to get in touch with you.
Okay, so it's careerahead.ie is the website, and you can email me at marylucey@careerahead.ie, or easiest probably to text me, because if I'm with people I can't take a call, and my number is 087-933-8941, 087-933-8941.
Great stuff. Mary, we'll chat to you next month, and thanks a million for that.
Sure.
Right, folks, we've got a break to take, and we will be talking to broadcaster Dermot Whelan. I'm sure you've all heard of him, of Dermot and Dave fame. He'll be chatting about comedy and mindfulness and how he's bringing the two together. That's up next.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant, College Street, Killarney. Mouth-watering food served with a warm and friendly service. Book your table today and enjoy the...
Fáilte ar ais. Now, we were talking at the start of the programme about cycling, and we heard from a gentleman called Neil Fox, who lost his sister Donna in a cycling accident in 2016. He was telling us about the efforts he's making and how he's teaming up with the Gardaí to spearhead a campaign whereby there would be a designated person in every Garda division with responsibility for cycling behaviour. That's kind of an overview of it. A lot of you getting in touch. This one is particularly shocking. A listener says, I was wearing a high-vis suit and I had lights on and I got knocked over the bonnet of a car. The driver had gone through a red light speeding, says that listener. My God, that is actually shocking. I presume that listener who texted in with that was on a bike at the time. Dreadful to hear that that has happened. But again, you know, we have to bear in mind that it's not just drivers, it's cyclists themselves. There's everyone on the road, pedestrians as well. Everyone has responsibility. But yes, that does happen, unfortunately. Another person, Charles, says, instead of blaming other road users, maybe a bit of respect and courtesy from other road users might help. That is his view. On the subject of clairvoyance, which we spoke about yesterday, a texter says, Deirdre, leave the dead, rest in peace, and remember them the way they were. Yeah, it is always surprises me the amount of people who are interested in that whole area and who want to go down that road. Now, I'm not going to knock what other people do. If that's what you want to do and if that makes you happy and makes you find some comfort when you lose a loved one, I'm just a little bit sceptical and a little bit cynical and a little bit curious as to the motives of people who say they can contact the dead as well. But look, I've got to keep an open mind about things. We all have to keep an open mind. Keep those comments coming in to us, 083 300 3300. Don't forget, you can contact Mary Lucy, by the way, as she said, careerahead.ie is her website. Now, there's a very unusual show coming to the INEC in Killarney this Thursday night. It's a show that has sold out all over the country, and it's a very unusual show because it combines comedy with meditation and a little bit of mental health as well. And the person behind the show is somebody who will be familiar to radio listeners. Now, maybe not so much to our radio listeners, because I know how loyal you all are to Radio Kerry, but he is Dermot Whelan. He is one half of Dermot and Dave, who are a well-known duo in broadcasting on Today FM. But when he's not on the radio, Dermot is involved in bringing this show around the country, and it has been massively successful. It's called Mindful, and I caught up with Dermot Whelan earlier and found out more about it. You're very welcome to the programme. It's weird to be interviewing someone from another radio station. We don't normally do that, but it's lovely to talk to you.
I know, it's like saying Hail Mary backwards into the mirror or something. You don't know what's going to happen.
Listen, you're coming here this week to the INEC on Thursday night. I suppose the first thing I want to ask you is, for people who don't know anything at all about the show, Dermot, could you give us an idea of what it's about?
Yes, great question, Deirdre, because you know, some people hear it's a mixture of comedy and meditation, and then they're like, okay, so does that mean we do have pints or we don't have pints? The answer to that one is do whatever you like. But yeah, so the show is exactly that. It's where comedy meets meditation. So I'm obviously a comedian, but I'm also a meditation teacher and have been practicing meditation for, gosh, nearly 15 years now. And I've been a teacher for over 5. So I guess I brought my two loves together. The whole mission with this thing, mission sounds a bit grand, but the whole purpose of it and the reason why I wanted to do it was because, you know, I feel that a lot of this, you know, sort of wellness world takes itself far too seriously. And, you know, people need to learn tools to de-stress, you know, and they want to learn it in a way that makes them happy and that they can relate to. Because too often I think this information is kind of made exclusive. You know, you feel like you have to be part of a special group of people or a special club, or maybe it's just presented to you by people that maybe you wouldn't have a pint with. So yeah. I thought that, you know, I wanted to blend the two. So the show itself, to answer your question in quite a long-winded way, is that, you know, I guess there's three parts to it. So the first part is my story, and I explain how the hell I ended up talking about this stuff, because I wasn't always into it, that's for sure, and through stand-up comedy. Then there's a kind of a funny TED Talk, for want of a better word, where I explain why all this stuff works, and we look at the cool science around it, and we're having crack along the way. And then the last part of the show is we actually try some of the techniques, and there's even a chocolate meditation in there. So it's the most delicious way to get into this stuff. So the idea is that you will laugh your head off, and then you will float out of the venue with a smile on your face, armed with the tools that you need to help you sleep better, feel better, and feel more like your old self if you felt that was missing for a while.
Oh, well, that sounds fantastic. And just about meditation, Dermot, I've read about it, I've tried it. It is very hard to get into it initially, isn't it? Because you're trying to quieten your mind and stop the 1,001 thoughts that are running around in your mind. But it's so bloody hard to do that. Well, I think so, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? You definitely are not alone in thinking that. And I think a lot of that has to do, Deirdre, with the way that it's been presented to people, in that it's, you know, it's not explained properly. And like the one thing I like to do in the show is that I bust a lot of the myths that we have learned around meditation and mindfulness and that whole thing. And, you know, one of them is that you're expected to clear your mind of all thoughts, you know, and obviously you've tried it. It's not very easy, is it?
God, no.
I always say, like, thoughts are okay, you know. Thoughts are okay. Like, if you've ever met anyone, you know, if you know anyone who doesn't have any thoughts, they're probably not doing so well. You know? So we actually need our thoughts. They're literally keeping us alive. So, you know, when you sit down to meditate or do any of the techniques, all we're trying to do is just focus our mind on one thing, you know. So it could be our breath, or it could be a flame, it could be a piece of music, or whatever it is. And when your mind wanders off, which it absolutely will, you just realize it's wandered and you bring it back. Like, it's okay. Your mind is going to wander. It's just the very act of realizing your mind has wandered off to the most random things. And then you bring your attention back, you know, to your breath. It's as simple as that. You know, we've 80,000 thoughts in our head every single day. They're not going anywhere. We don't want them to go anywhere because, you know, we need them to stay alive. So,
and what are the sort of benefits then of meditation? What has it done for you, we'll say?
Okay, great question, because I think obviously people know that maybe it helps with sleep and it helps you feel a little bit more calm, but there's so much science around it, and I do look at that. Like, obviously it lessens anxiety and it lessens depression and helps you to feel more optimistic, and it improves sleep and all that. That's all scientifically proven. But I'll give you in real terms, for me, the benefits that I've seen. You know, I was always, you know, well into my 30s. I guess an anxious person, but I wasn't really aware of it. So little things would worry me, you know. you know, something small, a little, you know, something small to worry about will give me that awful sinking feeling in my stomach all the time. You know, I'd have a knot in my stomach a lot of the time, and I just thought that was normal. You know, I guess my sleep wasn't the best, but I just thought that was normal, that you'd wake up a lot during the night. You know, I'd always fall asleep very easily, but then I'd wake up. I used to wake up at 10 past 3 in the morning. That was my special time.
My God.
To be alive. So what meditation did for me was mainly it allowed me to just get back to, I guess, a sense of calm that I didn't even know was possible. I just thought I would never have that because I just thought my normal was something else. So, you know, it allowed me to, you know, once you get out of that emergency mode that I didn't realize I was in, then everything seems to fall into place because your body's not worried about a threat in, you know, in your environment constantly. It means you can start to sleep better. It means you digest your food better. You know, I realized that I had way more patience, particularly around, say, you know, things like kids' bedtime, you know, and stuff like that, because now I was, you know, not in emergency mode all the time. I now was able to think a lot more creatively. So I guess all my work improved because I was able to actually just, you know, dream things up. And, you know, even give you a little example of it. You know, I used to kind of rush my way through the kids' bedtimes. I used to find it quite frustrating. And you know that feeling if you're a parent, it might be some listening who know that, you know, that you're kind of like, come on, go to bed. Because all you want to do is just flop down on the couch and
watch.
You know,
Netflix.
You feel like you've had a hard day. Exactly, yeah, and just kind of zone out. But it was actually my wife who pointed out to me first, said, you know, have you noticed how patient you are now at bedtime? Like, you're a lot more fun and engaged. And that was true. Suddenly, you know, I'd gone from wishing the kids would just go to sleep to I was being disappointed when they were gone to sleep. And, you know, I started to play games. And then one night I put a tea towel over my head and started putting on a silly voice and a character called Noni that I do.
Oh, yes, Noni.
On the radio, Noni, she sells a choker from the pram. you know, and she later became a children's book and all. You know, and I guess that, you know, that stuff was allowed to come out because I was now in a calmer, more present state of mind. And I was there in that space because I had started to do very simple breathing techniques, you know, in the morning time primarily and then throughout the day when I could think of it. So, you
know, it's been transformative. Yeah, it's been transformative for you. Yeah.
And absolutely.
I know you mentioned it earlier, Dermot, that you get the audience at the shows to do a little bit of a meditation. How's that gone down? Have people, because I mean, God, it must be so hard to control that amount of people. There'll always be someone heckling or messing or whatever. How have you managed that?
You know what, Deirdre, it sounds like that's exactly what it would be. And how could you sort of corral 1,000 people, you know, and get them all to try the technique? But you know what, it just happens. And I think a lot of the reason is that it's because people feel like they're in a very comfortable space, you know, and even the most hardened cynic in the audience feels that it's because it's been such a fun and funny evening that actually it's a safe environment and that everybody there is just like them. You know, there's nobody there in, you know, in robes, you know, or, you know, floating around in yoga trousers. You know, this is, you know, it's a very normal bunch of people. And what's lovely is the amount of men that come as well, you know, because I think traditionally in this space, men are often excluded, I think, because I think a lot of the language and the way it's sort of presented to people can be very skewed towards women. And men in particular, I think, sometimes can feel a bit left out of the whole, you know, meditation conversation. And so, you know, I think once I've explained, you know, what we're about to do, the chocolate meditation is a great way of getting into it because it's just a fun, kind of delicious way of getting in. And then it just sort of quietens down a bit and people are willing to try out the different techniques that we're doing. You know, and it doesn't get super serious. It's really just a chance for the audience to
to try it out. And there's just a really, really lovely energy in the room, and everybody just leaves with, as I said, with a lovely big smile on their face.
Well, it sounds like a really different night out. I mean, you have a good giggle, you get to dress up and go to the INEC, but you also sort of learn something that might just transform your life as well.
That's exactly it, you know, and you know, having done, I guess, straight stand-up comedy for years, there's nothing wrong with that, but I just love that when people leave, not only have they had a good night, but literally they're leaving with tools for their mental toolbox for when maybe later in the week when things are a little bit more stressful, that they can go, actually, do you know what? I know what to do here. I can actually control my stress response and how I react to the situation that I find myself in with this little technique that I learned the other night in Killarney. So, you know, the fact that people are taking away these tools, and that they really are tools, you know, because, you know, this all started for me when I had a panic attack back in the mid-noughties on the way to a comedy festival. So, you know, back then I didn't have these tools. I didn't understand my nervous system. I didn't understand my stress response. I didn't understand why, you know, my body was freaking out, as it seemed to me, you know, when I was having racing thoughts where I felt like I wasn't good enough, you know. But as you know, these are the things, this is the information I share in the evening. And so when the people move off into the night and the rest of their lives, they actually have these tools and they understand why they work, more importantly.
Exactly, and you're living proof that they do work. Well, listen, Dermot, we better let you go because I know you're busy and you've got to go back to your job at another radio station. but look, it's been such a pleasure to chat to you, and it's this Thursday night at the INEC, and there's still some tickets available, I believe.
Yes, there are. There's a few tickets left, and I just cannot wait to get back to Kerry. The last time I was there, I was jumping off the pier in Ventry and then jumping into hot seaweed barrels up on the pier there. It was amazing. So I can't wait to get back down and sample some of the beauty of the kingdom and meet everybody there.
Fantastic. Dermot, listen, I hope you get a great reaction. I know you will anyway. And it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks a million.